Thanks, Joanna, and good morning, Presiding Officer Duchesne and honorable members of the board. My name is David Callan, and I'm also representing Nordic Aqua Farms in this matter. Is my volume all right?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. And to answer directly Presiding Officer Duchesne's question to Attorney Tucker, in a deed or an option agreement, a call to the water, including a call to the water at high water mark, includes as a matter of law any rights that extend to the lower water mark. But that's an ownership issue of law and not a TRI issue of law. The TRI standard is a simple one, and it's plainly met here. As Attorney Benzinger explained, TRI is not a licensing criteria under Chapter 2, Section 11F, referenced by Attorney Tucker. It's an element of administrative standing to seek a permit. TRI is not about who actually owns something. It's about whether there's a sufficient showing that it's not a waste of the board's time to consider a permit. Nordic has submitted an option agreement to purchase an easement from the Eckroads. The Eckroads deed does not plainly exclude the intertidal zone. That's the end of the story for TRI. This issue has already been decided by numerous decision makers, including the commissioner and this board through its presiding officer.
Thank you.
As Ms. Bertacci's memo lays out, the presiding officer denied an identical request on August 23rd, 2019, in
a
second procedural order, Section 12.
Beautiful, a talented man.
So I'll pause for anyone to mute their line so that I'm not trying to compete. But as Ms. Bertacci's memo lays out, the presiding officer denied an identical request on August 23, 2019 in its second procedural order, Section 12. That decision was not appealed to the board and became final and binding for these proceedings at that time. Tying this quote-unquote renewed motion to Nordic's proffered hearing Exhibit 41, which is a red herring. Exhibit 41 was proffered at the hearing for the limited purpose of demonstrating that a hearing witness had falsely sworn to irrelevant facts, thus calling into question whether the board should trust that witness's sworn testimony on relevant facts. Exhibit 41 had nothing to do with TRI and nothing to do with actual ownership of the intertidal zone. It had only to do with whether the board should trust someone who appeared willing to make false statements under oath. Exhibit 41 does not give the board any reason to revisit the decision made by the presiding officer in the second procedural order, Section 12, and that alone should end the board's current analysis of this issue. The board's sister agency, the Bureau of Parks and Lands, has decided the same issue in Nordic's favor and against Attorney Tucker. Indeed, Attorney Tucker's clients, using the same theory of intertidal zone ownership advanced here, filed for a submerged land lease with BPL covering the same submerged lands that Nordic seeks to lease from the state. BPL, in addition to noting that it was improper to file a competing lease to block a project, found that under BPL's rules, Attorney Tucker's theory of intertidal zone ownership was insufficient to establish TRI for a submerged land lease sought by her client. This board should do likewise here. Suggesting that the issues in the pending court proceeding filed by Attorney Tucker somehow deprive Nordic of TRI is a similar red herring. While I'm discussing that pending case, if the board could flip in its packet to page 447, that portion of the court's January will have a picture of the properties at issue here. I'd like to highlight that under a different case, the Southridge case, the very existence of a pending court proceeding involving completing claims of ownership is sufficient as a matter of law to establish TRI before a permitting agency like the DEP, including the board. That also could end this analysis. Unlike the simple TRI standard, intertidal zone boundary law is a specialty area of law that can get quite complicated. To illustrate just how complicated, I'll briefly describe the most recent decision issued on intertidal zone boundary law that's already been referenced here by Attorney Tucker, Almere v. the Town of Kennebunkport. In that case, the law firm that represents Upstream Watch in these proceedings brought a lawsuit claiming that different clients in York County owned the intertidal zone of Goose Rock Beach and could stop people from crossing it, just as here Attorney Tucker has brought a lawsuit claiming that her clients own the intertidal zone and can stop Nordic from crossing it. That case involved 110 different waterfront lots. On about 80 of the lots, the parties agreed who owned what, and those waterfront owners settled with the defendant town. On the other 30 lots, the parties couldn't agree because intertidal zone boundary law is complicated. Indeed, it's complicated enough that the trial court decision in that case was almost 300 pages long. In those 300 pages, the court explained that of those 30 disputed lots, the plaintiffs were right as to one lot, and the defendant was right as to the other 29 lots. As Attorney Tucker indicated, I was the attorney who represented the defendant in that case, just as I am the attorney who is representing the defendant in the case brought by Attorney Tucker on behalf of the Maybe Graces. Thankfully, this board does not need to wade into the details of completing claims of intertidal zone ownership. That's a specialty area of law for the courts alone. Here, the board should simply apply the TRI standard in its rules and reaffirm the reasoning of the second procedural order, section 12, end of story. Indeed, the Maybe Grace lawsuit makes clear that Attorney Tucker's tactics in bringing that suit have been to stop Nordic's project and not to obtain judicial resolution of the underlying intertidal zone ownership issue. In January, the judge in that case issued a ruling that because Attorney Tucker's theory of intertidal zone ownership would mean that her clients own not just the relevant intertidal zone, but also the intertidal zone of innocent neighbors on either side of the Echroes property, that in order for Attorney Tucker's clients to continue with their lawsuit, they must also sue the neighbors on either side of the Echroes property where Nordic water pipes so that those neighbors can have an opportunity to defend their property rights. If the board looks at the map on its packet, page 447, in that decision, that makes clear that Attorney Tucker's clients are not neighbors to the property where these water pipes will cross. They live two lots down. Indeed, the issue of Attorney Tucker's questionable theory of intertidal zone ownership was fully briefed to the Superior Court back in October of 2019. The most likely reason that the judge hasn't yet ruled on that issue is because, despite the judge's January order, Attorney Tucker has to date failed or refused to join those other necessary neighbors. Were the lawsuit actually about ownership rather than about trying to stop this project, it wouldn't take Attorney Tucker 3 months to comply with the judge's simple order from January. Finally, although the board's TRI rules are found in Chapter 2, if the board wants a simple place to look at a summary of the law on intertidal zone ownership, as reaffirmed by the law court in the Alameda decision, the board needs look no further than its own rules in the definition of parcel of land under Chapter 371. We'll read the relevant portion of that definition, which is in section 1, letter L, definition of parcel of land, subsection 2. That rule says, this is a rule that the board is bound by, quote, in determining the area of a parcel of land, property in the intertidal zone shall be included as part of the property of the adjoining shoreland owner unless specifically excluded by deed. An owner of property located on tidewater owns all land down to the ordinary low water mark, or 1,650 feet, 100 rods, below the high water mark, whichever is less, unless specifically excluded by deed. The department's rule then goes on to explain how the side lot line of the intertidal zone are calculated. That rule is a concise summary of intertidal zone boundary law in Maine. It's found in the department's own rules. It's what the law court reiterated in Alameda. It holds that when you describe upland property, which by definition ends at the high water mark, and you describe it with a call to the water, including a call measured on that high water mark, that it includes all property rights down to the low water mark unless expressly excluded. Again, the board need not wade into the details of intertidal zone boundary law to reach its decision. The board's rules are plain, its standard is a simple one, and it's clearly been met here. I'd be happy to take any questions that the board or the staff might have.
At this time, I'd like to check with board members to see if any board member has a question.
Jim, no.